Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Healthy Tuesday, Carol. It's nice to be able to zoom in and see what you're doing.
I know.
Every Tuesday.
It is nice. This works out really well. Thank goodness for Zoom, right?
I know. Well, you know, yesterday was the first day of classes at Cal Poly with our virtual teaching schedule. And I have to say, I had a lot of anxiety about how that was going to translate. But happily enough, I had one class with 40 students and another class with 70 students. And they both went off without a hitch. All the students were able to Zoom in and be part of the lecture. And I will say, in all transparency, my daughter Kelly is here with us. And so she's been able to keep me on task and help me through the technology. And I don't think I could have done the whole class without her there, because there's a lot that goes on in managing an online lecture. But now that's behind me a little bit, I'm feeling a little more confident going forward with, all the aspects of my life that demand some sort of technology. And it also is very timely because April is Stress Awareness Month.
That is timely. Oh my goodness.
It is timely. We have been, as health practitioners, setting aside the month of April since 1992 to remember to incorporate stress management techniques into our practice, and to kind of continuously address how stress is prevalent in our lives and impacts our mental health and well-being and our physical health and well-being in ways that we notice and sometimes don't even notice. And one of the challenges has been that we've had stress forever, but the health practitioners, mental health practitioners, medical health practitioners have not always looked at stress itself as the core or root of a lot of mental health challenges that people struggle with. And so since 1992, there's been much more of an effort to look at stress as a kind of standalone experience that needs to be managed and needs to be adapted to in order for people to thrive. So today we're going to talk about stress and what it looks like and some ways to manage it. And then I also have invited a special guest on the show today, Ashlyn Hatch. Ashlyn was an intern at KCBX a couple of years ago. Gosh, I want to see now, it's probably 3 or 4 years ago now. Oh my goodness. And I've known Ashlyn since she was 9 years old, and she has gone on and blossomed into her life. And she's been living in New York and doing theater and working on her own podcasts and her own different avenues through the world of radio and theater. And she has a pretty wild story about her experience over the last couple of months as the coronavirus has kind of changed everyone's lives. So I'll be inviting Ashlyn into the conversation as well today. And we will be opening our phone lines in kind of an interesting way, because we really would like to hear from you. When it comes to stress management, one of the primary ways that we can help deal with and move stress through our bodies is to talk about it, is to acknowledge what we're feeling, to talk about what's going on, to give stress a voice so that it can move and process out. Because one of the reasons stress is so challenging is that it gets stuck in parts of our body. And so you might feel headaches or stomach aches, or your throat gets tight, or your jaw gets tight. All of those parts of your body are you clenching and holding stress in. And so to talk about what you're experiencing gives stress voice so that it can move out and relieve some of the tension. So if you feel like you'd like to talk about some stress, the number we're using today is 805-549-8855. It's not our typical number to call in, so you might want to write it down. It's 805-549-8855. And we'll be opening up the phone line soon as well. And you'll be giving your questions to Marisa, who's manning the phone lines for us, and I think Claire as well. And then they will bring your phone questions to Carol, who will then send them to me. So we have a whole team working through this. And if you're needing a little interaction with a human being, this is a great time to call in because you have Marisa and Claire and Carol all ready to chat with you. So this is about as close to a community as you're going to get today as when it comes to talking about stress and dealing with what's going on. But before I even jump into stress, I thought I would give you a little catch up on what's going on and the Casa de Barrett and how we've been surviving and thriving here. We started our family shelter in place on March 17th. My daughter Kirsten and her husband Brian and my granddaughter Georgia all arrived that night with my daughter Kelly and a cat and a litter box all in tow. And we've been together ever since. And as I've mentioned the last couple weeks, we have settled into a really comfortable routine. I love having everyone here. I am going to be heartbroken when it's time for everyone to go back to their lives as it was, because I really like the sense of the multi-generational experience. Everyone is working from home, but we each have our own kind of spot around the house. And my husband's out in his shed in the backyard. And I have a little cottage space in the back. So we have our own area. But my daughter Kelly is doing a preschool program with Georgia, my granddaughter. So they have a schedule every day. And then we take turns doing parts of the day with Georgia. My husband is doing gardening with her every day. So they've got all sorts of different vegetables going and flowers going. And she learned to ride a bicycle with two wheels. So in the afternoon, her dad takes her out for bike riding. I choose lunch and rest time. So I get the quiet activities. And then in the evenings, we have dinner together every night and play a game or watch a movie. And it really has gone well. And I think it's gone well because we have set a schedule, set a routine. We have some kind of rules in place about if you cook or do something you need to clean up, keeping the common spaces clean so everyone can enjoy it. And again, having some retreat spaces. So I know it won't go on forever like this. I know that things will be changing, but I know also that this is going to be something that we remember forever. As I imagine a lot of you are in situations that you're going to remember forever as well. Some good and some bad and some just is what it is. So when it comes to stress, you know, stress itself has to exist in some form. Evolutionarily, stress has always been a part of human survival because we need that fight or flight response in order to escape a dangerous situation or to recognize those butterflies if we meet someone we're attracted to. Our brain doesn't know the difference between a near-death experience and a falling in love lust experience. We have the same physical response of our mouth getting dry and our heart starting to race and our hands getting sweaty. You know, that stress release of adrenaline and cortisol helps keep us safe, helps us fall in love. So we don't want to completely annihilate stress from our system. It has to exist in some way on a continuum. But in a normal circumstance, and normal in quotation marks, because normal is such a strange word to try to define, but in ideal or optimum situations, we have our capacity to move into that fight or flight, to experience stressful situations, but then we are able to come back to a normal reset or a neutral setting where we're just comfortable in our body, where our breath is coming in and out in a nice natural pace. And so our body gets to reset and our nervous system resets. But unfortunately, with the speed and rate of things in our lives today, and this is even pre-coronavirus, with the rate of intensity our life is moving through, we rarely get a time to reset. Most people's lives are at full speed ahead all the time, day in and day out. And then you throw in there the technology, using screens, being on our phones, going through Instagram, staying up late at night, binge watching Netflix. There's rarely a time that we ever get back to just neutral, to just our nice, natural, at rest, at ease state. So what's happened is that people have found themselves living in these two extremes. On one side, is this 24/7 intensive, every moment of the day is booked and racing from one event to the other, and our stress is off the charts, and we're, you know, not eating well and not sleeping well and not taking care of ourselves. And then we burn out and we go to the opposite ends of the spectrum, and we go to numbing, where we feel nothing at all, where we just lay around and watch television, or we are on video games. Some people start to drink too much or eat too much or sleep too much. We literally are trying to numb our life experience at that point. And so living at those two extremes, as you can imagine, is not optimum for our mental health or physical health and well-being. That ideally we need to try to find kind of that space in the middle, where we're going on one end from this relaxed, neutral, having conversations with our loved ones, taking time to exercise, hydrating, eating 5 small meals a day, enjoying the beauty of the world around us when we can, and then being able to kind of gear up or ramp up if we have a deadline we have to meet, or we have a show we have to put on, or we have a paper we have to write. We have the capacity to ramp it up. And then we live in that intensity until that project is done, but then we allow ourselves to go back to neutral. And that's the dance that we really are trying to find. Unfortunately, or fortunately, in order to get into that sweet spot, it takes some effort. And I hesitate to say it takes some effort, because I think for a lot of us, we're feeling maxed out anyways. You know, feeling like I got to take that online yoga class, and then I got to take the online cooking class, then I'm going to take the online how to, you know, read a textbook class, and then I'm going to have a Zoom meeting with my friends and a Zoom cocktail party. Like, I think even in this shelter in place, we're putting intense amounts of pressure on ourselves to stay engaged in all ways. But I'm going to give you permission to back away from all of that and really focus on, since it's Stress Awareness Month, focus on how you can make friends with stress, how you can make friends with your physical and emotional reactions to stressful things in your life. And how I'm going to challenge you to do that is to take 5 intentional steps. And you don't have to do them all at once. You don't have to do them every day. Just choose one. But intentional steps to stop in the moment and recognize what's going on can help you bring stress levels down, tune into your breath, tune into what's happening, and allow yourself a reset. Just a reset. And here's the intentions. 1, you can say, I'm going to stop and I'm going to breathe. I can see Carol right now stopping and breathing because we are Zooming together. But you're going to stop and breathe. You're going to close your eyes for a moment in the moment. And that breath is very important, because the intentional breath comes from our belly, not from our chest. So if your shoulders are going up and down as you breathe, that's too intense. The relaxing breath expands your belly as you inhale and contracts your belly as you exhale. Then your shoulders feel heavy and relaxed. Your belly drops and softens. And you just have to do this cycle 5 times. Not deep and aggressive breathing, just the natural rhythm of an inhalation expanding your belly and an exhalation contracting your belly. Just 5 times. And as you do this, right before and right after, you say, I am taking these breaths because they are good for me. I am taking these breaths because they're going to reset my nervous system. Other intentions. When you exercise, before you exercise, set that intention. I am doing this because it helps to reset my body. I am doing this exercise to offload some stress. I am doing this exercise because it is going to help clear my head. That's a much different intention than I need to exercise because I ate 14 Twinkies, or I have to exercise because I want to get into my bathing suit. That's a very different way to approach exercise in your psyche. So I'm asking you to just approach exercise with a different intention, the intention of this is good for my mental health. Or you can choose how you hydrate. Every time you go to drink that water, hydrate yourself before you take a sip. Say, I'm drinking this water because it is going to hydrate me, keep my mind clear, and it's going to flush cortisol and adrenaline and unnecessary toxins from my system. And then finally, well, there's actually 2 more. Eating regularly before you sit down to eat. Don't eat a meal and wait 8 hours and then binge eat and then don't eat again. Try to eat 5 small meals throughout the day. And before you start them, say, this food is good for me. It's going to help reset my nervous system. This food is going to help me stay energized. And then you can do this with writing down things that are stressing you out. Sit for a moment and say, here's the noise in my head. I'm concerned about my parents. I'm concerned about my economic situation. I'm concerned about being able to connect with my friends. I'm going to write these down to give them a place to live outside of me. Because stress needs to have a place to exist. We can't just say, I don't want to feel stress anymore. I'm not going to think about it. Relax. Because every time you say to yourself, relax, I'm not going to think about it, I'm not going to be stressed, it just activates more stress. So to take the time to write down those thoughts and put them someplace away from you gives stress a voice, but removes it from your physical experience. All right, so those are the 5 or 6 intentions to just let you sit with. But I'm also going to let you think about some things you might need to talk about. That stress that needs a voice, well, give us a call. 805-549-8855 is a number to be part of our conversation. I'm also looking forward to checking in with Ashlyn Hatch, who has been waiting patiently. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can also find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. There are photos of our family sheltered in place that you can check out. You can always send me an email to Elizabeth@TheReluctantTherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Or podcast our show anywhere you find your podcasts. Subscribe, and our shows will be uploaded for you to listen at your convenience. As always, I look forward to seeing where our conversation goes. We'll be back in a moment to talk to Ashlyn Hatch and to take your calls.
Yes, I understand that every life must end. As we sit alone, I know someday we must go.
Oh, I'm a lucky man to count on both hands the ones I love.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And my guest in studio or in Zoom, I don't know what we call it these days, is Ashlyn Hatch. Hello, Ashlyn.
Hi, Elizabeth.
So as I mentioned at the top of the show, I've known Ashlyn since she was probably 9 years old. I got to watch her grow up in the theater and in different parts of her life. And then Ashlyn went to school in Oregon and came back and was an intern at KCBX and really helped shape this show and get us organized. And then you took off and did an internship in New York City. Mm-hmm. And then you didn't come back.
Yeah. I guess so.
So share a little bit about what you've been up to in New York since I last saw you and how you're doing now.
Yeah. So I have been living in New York for, I guess, close to 3 years now, which feels wild to say and is true. And I have been freelancing there as a theater director. And also working on various podcasts. I worked for a while with Night Vale Presents, which is an awesome podcast network that creates fiction podcasts with creators who usually don't work in radio, partners with them and says like, hey, what you're making is awesome. It could be more accessible if it was a podcast, which is something you and I have talked a lot about, Elizabeth, how, you know, this medium makes things so much more accessible than they would be otherwise, which is a really exciting thing about it. And yeah, so I've been living in New York, making lots of theater, lots of podcasts. And for the past year, I've been working on this show that was meant to take place on the launch of Virgin Voyages' new cruise line. Mm-hmm. And it's this huge immersive project, takes over the entire boat. And, you know, with like 50 performers. And has been like this huge undertaking.
Is it like one of those murder mystery ship ideas or
kind of? Yes. A little bit.
So
it's been this really exciting and like huge project that took a lot of build up, and at the beginning of March was when we were finally supposed to get on the ship. We've been making this entire show for a ship that for the whole time that we were planning it was being built. So we had no idea what the ship was going to look like. It was brand new. We were getting pictures sent to us. So we were about to get on the ship, and then, you know, we were hearing things about COVID and hearing that, like, oh, perhaps this is a real health hazard, hearing about ships that were getting quarantined. And that people weren't being allowed back into the U.S. And thought that perhaps our show was going to get canceled or postponed before we even got on the ship. But it did not. They flew us to Miami. We got on the ship.
This was on
March 8th is when we flew to Miami.
Okay.
And, you know, there were rumblings of like, yeah, things seem to be shutting down, considering shutting down, but we weren't hearing anything about our project being shut down. And so we go and we're on this boat for about a week that is able to hold about 4,000 people and is brand new and is a virgin ship. So like very swanky, but very empty. It's filled with pretty much just artists who are making things on the ship.
How many people were on your crew?
They're on the team of people making our show. There are about 15 on our prod team. And then we worked with actors who were already on the boat to perform other shows. So we were on the boat and we're, you know, kind of like sailing back and forth between Miami and the Bahamas, making this huge show that was, you know, both very wonderful and a lot to process and hold as we were hearing things from the outside about like, oh yes, you know, the NBA is postponed. You know, like huge convention centers are shutting down, concerts are being canceled. And we're sort of waiting to hear like what's going to happen. And also we keep leaving Miami and going to the Bahamas. And it's a question of like, will we be let back in?
Right.
And it was really, I think my brain truly just didn't quite process it while I was on the ship because it was such a huge series of events. And it was also the cognitive dissonance of being in this place that was so, you know, like I was seeing pictures that my friends were sending me of completely depleted grocery store shelves. Meanwhile, I'm on this ship where they're making very beautiful food that is given to me for free because it's a cruise ship. Nice. And it was just a huge thing for my brain to process. Then we hear that we're going to be, our show is going to be postponed and we'll be sent home, which was relieving in a way. And then, you know, a new set of things to figure out, namely where I would go, especially because at that point, this was March 12th when we learned that we would be leaving. And it seemed like New York was already sort of beginning to experience, have a set of experiences that were going to make it the epicenter. Mm-hmm. And so I had a choice of like, well, am I going to go back to New York where all of my stuff is and where my life usually is? Or am I going to like take this bag that I have packed to be on a cruise for a month and go home to California where I don't usually live and where it would be a huge adjustment for me to be home for an indeterminate amount of time, but where my family is and where there's a set of, you know, resources and space in a way there just isn't in New York. So I made the decision to come home. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, it was a huge whirlwind. And now I've been home for several weeks, living in my childhood bedroom and spending a lot of time with my family. And it has been a huge adjustment and you used the phraseology that I thought was so lovely of like making friends with your stress. Mm-hmm. And I think that has really been a huge part of what this process has been for me.
Well, and there's so many places to go with this because I imagine you have friends that you're concerned about back in New York City, but at the same time, it's great that you're home to help your mom out because you have a big family and younger mm-hmm. siblings. So to navigate that your stress is pulling you in different places, and then the economic piece as well. Let's hold right there for a second. You're listening to Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Ashlyn Hatch. And Carol says we have a question.
We
do. So Carol, it's back to you.
We do have a question from Steve in Los Osos. He called in and asked, are there any things I can say to my children, ages 7 and 16, to help relieve their stress? They've each expressed fear about getting sick or dying themselves, losing their parents, losing friends. And also, are there any exercises we can do together to help them feel less stress? That's Steve in Los Osos.
Thank you, Steve. Those are great questions. I'll start first with how do we talk with our children? And those are a big age gap between your children, so they have different cognitive understanding about what's going on. But they are processing the information similarly, which is fear for their future and fear of their losing part of their family. So one of the first things I'd recommend, and it sounds like you did that already, was to ask them what it is they know or think they know about the virus and what's happening and what have they heard about it, and let them process and talk quite a bit about what it is they understand to be the story. And you might find out that what they are hearing or what they're comprehending or what they think they know is incorrect. It might be more, you know, frightening than is reality. And so you can at least let them vent that out and help to make sense of or correct information that may not be right. Like, to give them some numbers sometimes, or to talk about the things you are doing as a family to stay healthy, and to, you know, talk about the practices of washing your hands and social distancing that are keeping you safe. Because part of our fear is that sense of not having any control over what's going on in our life. And so giving your children a sense of things they can control when they can't control everything else will be helpful. So making it kind of intentional, the things you're doing that are good for you as a family, washing hands, social distancing, getting some exercise as a family, sitting and maybe doing that breathing exercise with them, especially your younger child. At night before bedtime, start kind of adding some habits, especially the breath, because a lot of stress and anxiety comes in the form of hyperventilated breathing, that we start breathing very shallowly and quickly and rapidly, and it starts to make us feel dizzy or out of sorts or tired. And a lot of it is because we're just not fully catching our breath in a helpful way. So I would start there with doing some breathing exercises, make them fun, maybe grab an online guided meditation. Those are really fun for kids to be able to listen to and follow the breathing. I would start there. And then if you want some sort of outdoor, you know, game or activity, to ask the kids, to ask them, what would be something fun? I want you to create some sort of game or activity that we'll all do as a family. Because really the key in all of this is to help them feel some control over the things they can control, and to be able to talk about and let go of the things that they can't control and that are outside of your family system. So I hope that helps. If you want more clarification, let me know. And so, Ashlyn, what are some things that are going on in your house to help keep everyone calm? Because how many people are there right now?
There are 8 of us.
Okay.
Yeah, so big. Or 7. There are 7 of us here right now. But there are 2 dogs, so they also feel like a person. Yes. So we have been doing, I think, a lot of checking in with each other every day and just being like, okay, like, what are your, you know, desires for the day? What is your plan? Da da da. There are some things that we do with a sense of regularity, which is like syncing up about when we're going to go grocery shopping, or syncing about what we're going to do for dinner, like things where the family will sort of come together, or where there is a sort of mutual need or like sort of universal set of like, oh, we all enjoy this resource, or we all depend on this resource. And then because there's so many of us, I think we also try and have some time where we can all go off and do our different things. It's an interesting thing in my house because 2 of my brothers are still in school every day, but just online. And so they're around, but it's not the sort of thing where it's like, oh yes, hey, come go on a walk with me.
Right.
And yeah, so our schedules, I think we're right now still in a place of sort of learning how our schedules work, but syncing up around shared resources and needs has felt important. We also try and do at the end of the day, this was what my mom's idea from one of her friends. We do this thing called topic of the day, where we all will name just something that we're thinking about or heard about. And it can be something big that's like a world issue, or it can be something like, huh, I was thinking this about our dog today. And just so everyone sort of shares something that's been on their mind, especially because I think right now it can feel like the days, since they don't have their usual rhythms, it can feel like, oh, what did I even do today? Or I don't know, like the days can feel very repetitive or like they bleed into each other. And so just having that ritual at the end of the day and where everyone listens and hears each other and celebrates whatever it is that feels valid or of meaning to that other person has felt, it's quite small and also very meaningful.
Well, and I love that because as I said at the top of the show, when we're talking about stress and Stress Awareness Month, that one of the main things about stress is giving it a voice. And you might be talking about something silly that happened with a dog or a world event or something you thought about. And you might not recognize that it's a venting of stress, but it is. Because anytime we're talking about anything, even if it's something happy, because love is stressful, we don't tend to recognize it. But, you know, our most intimate relationships, those things that feed us, are also incredibly stressful and can cause us to have tightness in our stomachs or tension in our shoulders. You know, we worry about that, the love lasting or if we're communicating enough. So whenever we do have an opportunity to talk about anything and someone listens and acknowledges, I heard what you said, I can tell this is bothering you, or I can see that this is exciting for you, to have what we said be acknowledged and witnessed is stress relieving. At the foundation of stress relief, having a way to talk about what you're experiencing and having someone hear it is incredibly healing. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and we are taking calls just a little differently than usual, but you can call in and ask a question or share a thought at 805-549-8855. My guest is Ashlyn Hatch. We're checking in with Ashlyn and her life as a young woman out in the world, processing our new normal, and kind of talking about stress and how we can learn to manage and cope and live with that important aspect of stress that kind of helps keep us alive. 805-549-8855. We'll be back in a moment to continue our conversation and to take your calls.
Ooh, child, things are gone.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guest today is Ashlyn Hatch. It is also April, and that is Stress Awareness Month, which seems incredibly timely given what we're all dealing with right now in different aspects and different ways in our homes and in our work and just in our lives in general. There's a lot of unknown. There's a lot of uncertainty. And as Steve called and asked about before, how do we help? How do we talk about this to help others in our family feel okay? And unfortunately, we don't have that easy answer of don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. You know, everything will work out. We've got it under control, because we don't really know if we have things under control. Our kids can sense when we're not telling them the truth. So we have to find a way to tell the truth in a way that's comforting, but it's not dismissive. You know, using a cliche like that's all right, this too shall pass, isn't always calming, because we don't know when it'll pass and what does that mean and should I be worried? So we have to find a way to talk about how we can take care of those things we can control, like making time to breathe every day, making time to get some exercise, making time to hug someone that is close to us if you are sheltered in place with family members or with your significant other or friends. It's important to take the time to intentionally hug each other and embrace and kind of pass that loving energy back and forth, because that keeps us alive. And sometimes when we're shut in together, maybe Ashlyn's experiencing this, you in some ways don't hug each other as much because you're trying to give each other a lot of space. So it in some ways is even more important to take a moment to say, let me give you a hug. I'm going to hug you right in this moment. And then if you're sheltered in place alone and you don't have someone physically with you, this may sound strange, but there is actual research data that shows hugging a stuffed animal or a blanket or something that you have an attachment to releases the same comforting hormones that hugging another human being does. So you can find that beloved stuffed animal that you kind of tuck away and hold it tight, or if there's a blanket or something that smells comforting, that gripping and holding will also release those chemicals, those hormones. So do those things with intention, because we have to give stress a place to move so it doesn't clamp down and cause us to have headaches, stomach aches, neck aches, to be irritable, anxious, feel restless, overwhelmed, or unmotivated. All right, so Ashley, I'm going to jump back to you. I have two questions that are related and unrelated.
Great.
The first one is, I know that you left friends back home in New York, and I'm wondering how they're faring. And I saw a picture of you wearing a bridesmaid's dress in front of a screen. Now, are those two stories related in any way?
They are. Yeah. So I have many friends. Well, as I was saying when I was on the cruise, I was working with a group of people who are largely from New York. So when we went to the cruise, it was a large group of us from New York who all flew to Miami together. And then when we left the cruise, many of them were going back to New York and I was going to California. And these are some of my closest friends. I also am very close with my roommates who live in New York. I'm dating someone who lives in Philadelphia. And so, yeah, really many people who I care about so deeply are very far away from me right now. And people who I usually am quite physically close to, and have an expectation that I'll see pretty regularly. And my body knows those rhythms of seeing these people and being in community. And that it has been a really big shift. And, I am from California and live in New York and went to school in Oregon. And so I do know what it is to be in long distance friendships where you really care about somebody and you don't see them very often and you find other ways to communicate. And there is stress to that. And I think it's a different sort of stress than this kind of immediate shift that happened of like,
not knowing you're returning either. You don't have an end date.
It being open-ended, right? And then also I think being in a long-distance relationship, usually I'm in New York, the person I'm dating is in Philadelphia, and that is long-distance. And also we are able, to sort of know when the end date is of when we'll see each other and plan and have a rhythm. And that has been upended in a way that, it's not like any of the care in any of those friendships, relationship has dissipated. It just is that it's now hugely different structurally. And I think my body is adjusting in a way of like, a little bit of shock, right? Of like, this was so unexpected. My community is a huge deal to me. Mm-hmm. People there do seem to be faring very well, which is soothing to hear. It is a really scary time. I think there's a lot of unknowns. Even when people are doing well on the day that you check in with them, it's not like they're saying, and I think I will be doing well 5 days from now. It really is a today I am doing well.
That's fair.
And checking in, I have found that it is really a lot of checking in about the present rather than checking in about the future that's happening.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
And so that has just been, it's been really a new thing to check in with people and be so present in what we're feeling right now and really separating ourselves from plans and futurity in the way that we would maybe more usually talk about like, well, what are you going to do over the summer? And da da da. It's really about how we're doing and holding each other and listening to each other right now. Okay. So the wedding I have some friends, one of my dearest best friends in New York, who has been living with her girlfriend for quite some time and, learned that there was just like a huge shift in circumstances for them that came up really suddenly. They had no idea that this was going to be a part of their life. And they decided that they were going to have this wedding. And it was incredible. I got a text message that said, hey, would you like to be the flower girl in my Zoom wedding? and I said, yes, of course. And it was such a lovely, just incredibly joyful moment where people from my friend's life who are all across the country showed up and we all sat on Zoom and it was just a lovely, very intentional, careful ceremony. And it wasn't very long. It was a half hour and people were all, various levels of dressed up and not dressed up in their, sweats. I was wearing my high school prom dress because that's what I have here in my childhood bedroom. And we just celebrated their togethers. And they had this, their vows. They said at the end of their vows, this lovely thing of like, they were lighting candles individually and then together. And they said, you know, by combining our vigil, our individual lights, we commit to being a light in this world. And to, that felt, I mean, talking about stress, right? And like how community can sometimes soothe stress, that felt so soothing and wonderful to me to be like, yes, in this moment where it is very stressful, we can also be a light to one another.
Well, and I also like, because the theme for me in all stress management is intention, that when we make an intention before we do the action, it has a double impact on our nervous system. So before we hug someone, we say, I'm hugging you because this is good for both of us. The hug is extra good. And if you say to your friends, we're going to gather, but we're not going to just gather and chit chat. We're gathering for this purpose, to celebrate this couple or to celebrate this event. It gives you a stronger sense of grounding in that moment. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Ashlyn Hatch. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And Carol, you're waving a question sign up.
Yes, we got a call with, well, actually, it's not so much a question, and it is for Ashlyn. Margie has been listening, and she does find comfort in listening to the radio. And you know what, Ashlyn? It's just, you know, the checking in on people. She is so glad to hear that you're okay, and she loves you. So, you know, I think that really... it really relieves some stress for her, knowing that you're okay.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in, Margie. She is a loyal listener. And I do know that the radio is one of our go-to places. It has been since radio began crossing the airwaves. I don't even know how long, Carol, 150 years? I don't know.
But I think it was
there's
around,
something about the sound of voices kind of coming into our room that's incredibly calming. And Ashlyn has one of those calming voices, as well as an enthusiasm for life that I always enjoy hearing. And another call, Carol.
Yes, Kimberly is calling from Bradley, and she was visiting from Hawaii, and apparently she is stuck. It looks like she is stuck in a trailer in Bradley, and she's normally very self-sufficient, but says she's having trouble functioning day to day. Being stuck in a trailer in Bradley, I can get it. She would like some practical advice on how to deal with isolation and stress. And she doesn't have a television, but she does. She has radio.
Kimberly, I am sorry, because as Ashlyn was saying, that's a shocking change when you unexpectedly are isolated. You know, there's people that go on silent retreats or take solo backpacking trips, and they've intentionally said, I'm going to take this time to regroup. Because there's something incredibly healing about intentional isolation or intentional social isolation. But to be kind of put in a spot that you weren't expecting to be is overwhelming. And I wish I could see you and talk to you because I think that would be helpful. I encourage you to reach out to people that you know and strike up these conversations and talk about how you're feeling. One, because I imagine many people are going to resonate with the same experience of feeling isolated and lonely. And as Ashlyn said, to intentionally set those conversations up, because it's one thing to call up and say, hey, I just want to say hi, feeling kind of lonely. How are you doing? That little light. But if you call and say, you know what, I need to have a conversation, or I need someone to listen to me right now. Could I have 10 minutes of your time just to really talk? And to ask directly for what it is you need, that will be incredibly helpful for your mental health and well-being, to have those set times and to try to set some sort of rhythm. Ashlyn used that term a couple of times, to set some sort of rhythm or routine to your life in the day-to-day so that it doesn't feel like a never-ending experience. To try to have a beginning, middle, and end to your day. And think about it, like, I'm going to eat breakfast now, and I'm going to call my friend and take 10 minutes to talk and to listen. And then I'm going to eat at this time, and I'm going to take a walk, and then dinner at this time, and then bed. And to really lay that out, because we are people who do well in habitual routines. And so you're going to have to create something like that for yourself, some ritual routines. Maybe you light a candle every day at, you know, 8 o'clock, and you sit there for a moment and just let yourself feel whatever it is you need to feel, to grieve, to cry, to yell, to shake, but to light that candle and just give yourself permission to let those feelings flow out. And then after 10 minutes or so, it might be five, it might be 30 minutes, however long it takes for you to just go with whatever's coming up, then blow that candle out and walk away and start a new project, either reading a book or writing a letter to a friend. A lot of people, you know, will say journaling is such a great mental health tool. And I will tell you that of all of the mental health tools we have, journaling has the most research data that proves when you write out how you're feeling, there are physical changes in our neurons, in our nervous system, in our body. So I'm not going to give you homework of having to start a journal, because people who don't like to journal absolutely hate it. And people who enjoy journaling do it well. But I encourage you to write letters, and you can mail them or not mail them. But when you say, dear mom or dear Uncle Tony or dear whoever it is, you have a picture of who that person is in your head. And then you start writing to them in that voice. So I hope that helps. And we were going to play around with the zooming in to talk. We might try that next week, Kimberly, and maybe you can find Zoom on your computer and call in. All right. I hope that helps. Next question.
Yes. Kyle called.
Okay. Now I'm ready, Carol.
Okay. Kyle called. And Kyle is having trouble managing different stress levels. He feels guilty when the rest of the world is so messed up. Any advice?
Ashlyn, how about you? Do you experience guilt that you're in this comfortable space of your home and your friends are struggling? How are you dealing with that?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Well, I experienced a level of guilt around that, I think, beginning with when I was on that cruise trip, because like I was saying, I was, you know, seeing all of these experiences where my friends were going through so much stress. And I, too, was going through stress, but a very different kind. Yeah, I experienced guilt. And I also experienced, I think, this sort of series of question marks around how to care for and be in relationship to others when we are all experiencing something that is huge and where we are all, you know, collectively grieving, in a way where it is anchored in something similar, and also where some of us have maybe different sorts of resources or support or stability than others. I think I feel both guilt and a series of questions around how to not minimize the fact that this is a shared experience, but also engage with the fact that, like, yeah, some of us are experiencing this in ways that are perhaps more severe or less stable than others.
Yeah, and that's what I think is challenging for the whole situation, because I talked to my best friend, lives in Boise, Idaho, and we talked this morning, and I have to admit, I didn't realize how hard hit the Wood River Valley of Idaho had been, where the ski resorts are, and they'd had a really huge cluster of people who'd been stricken with COVID. And my girlfriend had a couple friends that had really struggled. And so when we talked this morning, and I was, you know, it was sunny here, and I was walking, and I was kind of talking about gardening classes. And then I said, and what's going on for you? And then she talked about her reality. And I said, gosh, I am embarrassed. I'm sorry I didn't get to that place. It is, as Kyle said, it's really hard when you're in a safe, comfortable place with enough food to be able to, we all, I think, as caring humans, want to feel the pain that everyone's feeling so that we're really joined in there with them, but we can't. And we can have empathy, but only to such a level. And Kyle, what I'm going to throw out to you, and to a lot of people who are feeling like, I'm really comfortable and I want to be able to be there for others, is to find a couple of things. I'm really big about writing those letters, you know, sending something in the mail, send a card to people that you know are in other places, because as wonderful as it is to be able to call and talk to someone, getting a letter in the mail or a card or a picture that was drawn is going to be really healing. And then, of course, if you have any extra finances at all to support those outlets that you care about, news outlets, media outlets. My daughter came up with the idea. We sent flowers to my friends that are nurses up in the Bay Area. So we just sent flowers to them just out of the blue. So to find actions you can do will help alleviate that stress. And thanks for calling in, Kyle. And we'll get you zoomed in next week as well. Carol, you said you had another question.
Well, that's more of a comment from a listener.
Wait, let me unmute you again. Okay, Carol, you're ready.
Yes, and this listener says that it helped me so much this past weekend to get together via Zoom with two other couples, and they played the dictionary game, they laughed, they had a toast with glasses of wine, and spent 2 hours together just having fun playing a game. And that was really helpful for them.
That is, and again, it kind of goes back to that intentionality is a little different than, hey, I'll just give you a call and check in. But if you say, let's play a game or let's have a wedding, as Ashlyn experienced, to kind of make that plan. And this is a great weekend. Our family has a traditional Easter hunt for the baskets, and it includes the kids having to read and act out different clues to go around the house and find the basket. So I'm writing those. And maybe I shouldn't say it. I hope my nieces and nephews aren't listening. But the Easter Bunny will be writing those clues, and we're going to have a Zoom Easter hunt on Sunday. And so having those intentional activities really help us to process things in a more helpful way. You know, again, it's not that it's not helpful just to call or text and say, hey, I'm checking in. That is a great thought. But to have a plan behind it gives it a little more merit. So Ashlyn, you said something that I really hadn't honed in on until today. And that is one of the challenges of what we're going through, I think, is that we can't really talk about the future because we don't know when everything is going to be opened again. And I hadn't connected that until you brought it up, that we can't, when my friend and I hung up, I was planning to go to Boise to see her this summer. And we never said, I'll see you in June because we don't know. And yeah. How is that weighing on you being here and not being employed as well, because you've been really self-sufficient? How is that weighing on you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so honestly for me, for the first several weeks, I think it was a project and continues to be a project of letting my body and brain process because it is such a huge and immediate shift. Both because the theater industry is often about, you know, like planning for the future, having your projects lined up, thinking really specifically and in terms of time balancing of like, okay, I'll be working on this then and planning your schedules with your friends and family and loved ones accordingly. So for the first couple weeks, it was just really about being gentle with my body and understanding like, okay, there's honestly a bit of a gap between where my brain is at, where I logically understand, and where my body is at in terms of emotionally processing and grieving this huge shift and this place of now, yeah, just unknownness and a very different version of life, not necessarily worse. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, I think there's a lot of loveliness that comes from this sort of presence in each other's lives, both in terms of now getting to be with the people with whom we are sheltering in place, if we have missed them, if we love them. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, this thing of getting to check in with people and be very in the moment, but really being gentle with myself and acknowledging, okay, this is a shift. My body feels some sadness around this. My body feels some confusion around this. Mm-hmm. Even if my brain knows that I have a lot of resources and that I am supported and that I am safe, also a lot of the social structures that often remind me of that are now destabilized, and I get to feel sad and I get to feel that I don't know what to do next. And some days I get to wake up and feel like, oh yeah, I have a bunch of things on my docket that I'd like to explore in terms of what new structures can look like. And some days I get to wake up and be like, oh my gosh, like, how do I even get up and get coffee right now? And that doesn't mean that I will be either of those ways forever.
True.
And I think that has been liberating, is that, and that's like where I'm at with it right now, is that I don't know about the future and no moment right now is indicative of what forever will be.
And it is, when we're talking about stress in the last few minutes today, I want to leave people again with some intentional things you can do to help manage and make friends with your stress, because trying to eradicate stress really isn't going to help. Because whenever we say, I don't want to feel stressed or I'm not going to worry about it, it just magnifies the feelings inside of us. Just saying, I don't want something doesn't make it go away. We actually have to have an alternative plan. And again, stress is important in some ways because that fight or flight system in our bodies helps us when we fall in love. It helps to motivate loving relationships, feeling a little unsure, uneasy. That is the kind of juice of love. And it's also what keeps us safe when we're in danger or in a dangerous situation. So we're not trying to eradicate stress. We also aren't trying to stay so busy that we never stop and think about what is different or what is happening in our lives. But as Ashlyn said, to acknowledge that although I may be safe in my home and I have toilet paper or, you know, food, it doesn't mean that I'm not grieving, that I'm not having these kind of lingering stomach aches or a tightness in my chest or a headache or an irritability that I don't usually have or an anxiousness. Because when we don't know what the future is or when we can plan for the future, we really are stuck in this place of dissonance, of discord. And it's okay to acknowledge that. Don't try to just push it away or ignore it or go for a run or get extra busy, because that's just going to shove the anxiety down deeper inside of you or the stress. Acknowledge it, give it a voice, let it be what it is, and then sit. Sit with it until you're ready to move on to whatever's next. Ashlyn, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Elizabeth. This was so wonderful for me. Thank you.
And I know since you're at home, I'm going to tap into you again over the next few weeks and we'll talk about theater and other things that are going on. Anyone else wants to be part of the conversation, you can always send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our show. Go to any podcast outlet and type in A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I am there to keep you company. As always, I appreciate you supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and we will be back next Tuesday at 2 to carry on this conversation.
It was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood. Blackness was a virtue.